Welcome back to another episode of Go, Go, Grow. This is the coaching style podcast that helps businesses of all size, particularly startups, second stage and scale ups, grow their business and reach new heights. If you're one of those types of companies, you're in the right place. My name is Michelle Page and I am your host. I'm joined today by a wonderful CPA, CFO, numbers extraordinaire expert. His name is Rich Veltri, founder of the Veltri Group. Hello, Rich.
How are you?
I'm well. I'm well. Thank you for joining me today.
No problem.
Absolutely.
Looking forward to the conversation. Yeah, very, very cool.
So I think you like talking about numbers and taxes and business setups and structures and things like that, right?
I do. Been talking about it for a very long time.
Yes, you have. So you also, in addition to your company, the Veltri Group, you're also the co-host of a podcast called Books in the Biz. And you have a co-host as well. Is that right?
That's correct. My friend Dan Paulson and I started it a year ago, and we focus on the crossover between finance and operations.
Awesome. So what types of topics, more specifically, like episode titles or guests, or just so our listeners, I'm sure they would have a cross-pollination of interest with yours as well.
Yeah, I think so. You will find that there are a number of episodes that basically talk about the fact that as you scale, you wind up seeing that there is sort of a split between operations and actually running, you know, day-to-day company sales, the company actually getting their work done, and how they go about doing that. And the finance department becomes a little bit more separated from it. Mm-hmm. As a startup grows, a lot of times they'll have one or the other, I think. They'll have either an operations person or a finance person. And the more successful ones have an operations person who has some sense of what the finance means.
Yes.
So, but as you grow, that person can't take on more and more and more. There's only so much that they can actually do by themselves. So you eventually wind up splitting that task between an operations side and a finance side. And you start to be able to decide what departments should report to who. So you start to see that the two pieces will go across, but if they become too siloed, you wind up with a company that's operating disjointed. It's just not proper because operations has to talk to finance. They have to tell finance what's going on.
All functional areas of an organization have to communicate and collaborate. And that's the way that you, first of all, survive. And then how you scale and thrive. So I'm so glad to hear that is something that's a common thread with yours as well. And you absolutely underscore a great point there. So the whole point of being in business is to grow your company. And if you're the only one trying to do everything, you only have so much bandwidth. So
you actually stop yourself. Yeah,
exactly. You're your biggest problem. So you bring on an operations person, let's say, and okay, so there's two of you. Well, somebody's got to do the finance and accounting and everything else. Okay, great. So there's two of you having to do all these functions, like you said. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do when you've gotten so big? You've got to bring on a third person. So it's so important for those critical areas such as finance and operations and all the different executive seats to have that so tightly integrated. So your podcast is one that would provide incredible knowledge and resources for our Go, Go, Grow audience. That's awesome.
Absolutely.
Okay. So one of the great ways that you've described your area of expertise to me is that you provide, the Veltri Group provides accounting and finance support to help companies grow or diagnose their barriers to growth.
Right.
Well, we all know that growing is, you know, pretty fundamental as far as we need help to do that. And, you know, numbers help with that. Of course, the dollars and cents. How do you help them figure out barriers to growth?
Well, sometimes you just have to look at the numbers in a slightly different way. I remember one of the first clients that I worked on actually had asked me to take a look at their books to see why they weren't growing anymore, you know, why everything had sort of stagnated. And when I looked at his books, I'm like, your books are in order. They look like they're in good shape. What's, you know, I'm trying to figure out what the problem is. And he was in an area that he actually had, you know, 10 routes that he was using. And I said, well, are they all profitable? And he said, I have no idea. So what we did was wound up breaking it down. Yeah, light bulb went off. And we just basically said, well, let's look at all 10 and see if the 10 are actually profitable. And we found out that there was three of them that had no customers on them whatsoever.
Oh, wow.
So I said, why are you paying for those three routes if you don't have any customers on it? And he said, that's for future growth. And I said, well, your future growth is eating your current growth because you're paying for something that you're not using. So how about we get rid of those and let's see what happens. Cancel those three, you know, vendor contracts. And when he did that, all of a sudden the company went from $3 million in revenue to $15 million in revenue, and private equity got invested in the company. And he got the investment needed to become more global. All of a sudden that he wound up eventually getting sold to Panasonic. Wow. It became a division of Panasonic.
Is a successful diagnosis.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I didn't think it was going to go that far, especially, but it was one of my first clients. And I realized, you know, sometimes you just have to dig a little deeper. Mm-hmm. And that's when you can start to see, here's what your issue was. And when we found those three contracts, that was our issue. And it opened everything up for him.
So here's a key takeaway. So as a business owner, a business leader, an entrepreneur, we may make business decisions based on our goals. He wanted to grow. Mm-hmm. And in his estimation, laying the groundwork for growth and having these routes kind of on deck was a wise decision. But he possibly didn't have the financial expertise and that knowledge base to say, okay, well, let's look at how this plays into every other landscape of my finances. So he could have great strategy from a business perspective, but unless you have the financial strategy and knowledge as well, you're not getting the bang for your buck. That's the value of having the financial expert on your team. Fair?
Absolutely. 100%. It's definitely the way to go. I think there's plenty of examples of something similar. So after I saw that happen the first time, it was very easy to go out and see how many other people kind of needed as well.
Yeah.
So it became one of the things, just, do you have to just dig a little further and see?
So, you know, whenever I start an engagement with a client, they may come to me and say, well, we need to sell more, or we need more leads, or we need our salespeople to close more deals. Okay, great. So I start asking questions. Who's your market? Who are you selling to? What's your message? What leads you're using? What's your CRM? And of course, they either can't answer or they don't have quality answers. So while I'm doing an assessment, okay, how did you get here? They think, okay, well, this is the band-aid I need. I need more sales. No, you need to diagnose what that is. So you're doing that kind of financial assessment before you can diagnose. So I think that's what a lot of people probably miss.
Yeah, I see a lot of people too, especially when they're, you know, new founders. You know, you ask them, well, how do your financials look? Well, my sales are X.
Yeah.
Okay. I need more.
Yeah.
I'm the type of person who wants more. I need to know more about your bottom line as opposed to your top line. Mm-hmm. And by that, we're talking about the income statement. You know, you're only giving me the top number. Are you bringing in $20 million in sales, but then spending $25 million to get there? That's the rest of the numbers that I need to know. You know, your top line is fabulous. Okay. And I find that more and more founders are able to tell me that number. That's one of the first numbers they've actually figured out.
Yeah.
But how about the rest of them? What do the rest of them look like?
Absolutely. So this just completely underscores the reason why you may be the top expert at whatever you're in business doing, but unless you're the business that you're in is financial, you need a financial expert to ride shotgun with you. Yeah. So one of the things that you and I talked about, which, by the way, just to give our listeners a kind of a background, you and I met about 2 years ago. And at that time, I was going through a bit of a pivot with my company. I was preparing to transition the focus of my company. We were, you know, just coming out of COVID at that point, spring of 22, I guess. And I wanted to change who I offered my services to and what my services were. And I was planning on a move out of state. And I'm like, okay, well, I've been in business 15 years. Goals have changed. I need to go about this a different way. I'm always telling people start with the end in mind. I'm starting with the end in mind. So at that time I was doing a tremendous amount of networking, which I cannot underscore enough how important that is. I know you would agree with that.
Absolutely.
And you and I met through, actually we met on a couple different networking groups and we kind of clicked and I said, you know what? I need a CPA on my team and Rich knows his stuff. Yeah, absolutely. So you and I talked through the whole process of, starting a new business in a new state. At the time, Go Grow was getting started and okay, well, is that a separate company? Is that a brand? And, you know, do I stay in LLC? What's my business organization look like? And you have been such a value to me. So I wanted to kind of share that, data dump with everyone else, cause I'm sure they're going to want that value as well. So can I kind of pick your brain on that again?
Absolutely. 100%.
Okay.
Not a problem.
Okay. So, one of the things I want to share first, and we'll, look at the graphic here. When you're talking about a financial professional on your team or someone that's working on your books, your taxes and whatnot, all those, number professions are not the same. So if I could, I'm going to ask you to kind of break down. So if we go through, okay, so you've got your book, I'm going to put them in kind of three different groups here and ask you to kind of give us a couple words about what each does. Bookkeeper, your ARAP, and your accountant.
Okay. Their responsibility, okay, all three of them, slightly different levels of experience. Okay. But their responsibility has to do with reporting. So the first two, probably more so than the third one, are keyed in on making sure your bills are paid, your invoices are out, and your invoices are collected. Okay. So depending on the size of your company, depending on, you know, what your kind of needs are, you may be able to go with just a bookkeeper whose experience has been keeping track of things that have already happened and potentially have a lot of experience in what I would call the cash basis. So money in, money out, what money came in, what money went out, how did it, you know, what does it actually translate to? So they can tell you, you brought in, you know, $50,000 this month from that customer and you spent $10,000 on payroll and another $5,000 on overhead. And they can basically give you the categories of what you brought in versus what you spent. The ARAP is as you get a little bigger and you start to split the task, as we talked about before, As you start to split that task, you have an AR person who's solely focused on the invoice side, and then an AP person, which is solely focused on the bill side. And you don't want those two people to kind of mix as you get bigger, because you're putting a lot of trust in the fact that the AR person is not handling your bills as well, because that's how money can get funneled away from you.
Yeah, we don't want that.
To somebody else. Go ahead.
We don't want that.
No, we don't want that. We don't want that. And then when you get up to kind of that accountant level, and some people would probably argue that there's ways that, you know, you can further describe what these people do. But I think the accountant has a little bit more understanding of what we call the accrual basis, which is not so much what did you collect, but what did you bill, mm-hmm. versus not so much what you paid, but what they call incurred. And that means that when when a bill comes in, you owe it. So you spent something. Whether you've actually paid it out yet or not, you've spent something. So the accountant kind of looks at things a little bit differently than just cash in, cash out. And they look at what did you bill versus what did you spend.
Okay. Now, one thing that a lot of people don't, I'm sorry, did you have something more to add? Okay. Role or title a lot of people don't really understand, it's a little muddy for them, is controller. How does that differ from accountant to kind of the next level up CFO?
I think the controller is usually an accountant. It's just that they're a little bit more of a protector, because you could have five accountants that work for the controller. The controller can just kind of be that, you know, that leading person that basically says, these are all the things that have to get done because I have a deadline to report to the bank, the shareholders, the owner. You know, their responsibility is I need to tell everybody how we did, or we have to tell people what's going on. We have to get the tax return done. So the controller winds up kind of being that person that focuses on what has happened and what needs to get done.
So depending on the size and scope of your organization, in terms of headcount, what I'm inferring here is you could potentially, if you're lean and mean, could have a part-time or a QuickBooks expert or someone do the bookkeeping part, perhaps even AR, AP. But if you're still that lean and mean person or organization, you probably at that point, once you get past the kind of transactional things, the next step would be a CFO, whether it's fractional or a member of the leadership team, because you need somebody to go from handling the transactions to somebody who's going to actually be able to help you make decisions and provide you the expert knowledge and really be a trusted advisor and help you kind of demystify not only what the numbers are, but how to use them.
Right. I think there is a level of conversation that has to be happening. If you're the founder, owner, and you've kind of taken the position of it's your company, so you're the chief executive officer, you're the CEO, you're just looking for someone that can talk to you at your level about the finances. Just like you would hire somebody who's the chief operating officer to take over the role of understanding the companies to have a conversation with you at your level about how the operations are going, then you want to have somebody that can talk to you at your level for the finances. And everybody that works underneath the finance person is generally an accountant, financial planner, something that's, you know, a person that is actually supporting what that CFO needs. So CFO really needs to be able to look at things that have happened, somewhat predict what he thinks will happen, and then create strategy around it to make sure what he thinks is going to happen is what he wants to happen.
You quoted something when, it's probably been a couple of weeks now, I thought was really succinct. Accountants look backwards, CFOs look forward. Yeah. Pretty much sums it up.
The CFO is definitely looking forward. sometimes he has to get the information from the people looking backward to help him look forward.
Yeah. Well, that's how you make decisions. But other than that,
I think that's exactly right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's exactly right. So there's a lot of people out there who are accountants who say, well, I can be the CFO because I was an accountant. Well, maybe. I take that very carefully when I say that because I don't want to offend anybody. But there are definitely people out there who are stuck in the accountant role who would have a very hard time looking at the future and being able to set up a strategy or understand what they think the strategy should be and make that level of decision that steers an entire company a certain direction.
Right.
So it's definitely an acquired skill.
It is. And it's just because you can execute something well doesn't mean that you can take it to a different level and kind of be on the outside looking in. If you're on the inside looking out, which is, you know, that execution level, then you're not having to make decisions. You're interpreting data from how do I record what has happened? Right. So you're interpreting the past. Like you said, accountants look backwards. Yep. But as a CFO or really any type of that trusted advisor, the knowledge expert, you have to take what has already been recorded by that expert, the accountant, or whoever the financial person is before them, and say, okay, well, this is the expert data that's been acquired. How do I extrapolate this to be meaningful? So definitely two different skill sets. You know, the person that mines the diamond is not the person that cuts it.
This is true.
Hey, I just thought
this
of that.
This is true. That's good. It's a good one.
I think I might need to keep that one.
I would definitely go to the trademark office or let's go down there and get that registered for you. You're definitely spot on.
Awesome. So we've kind of laid out the different roles in the whole realm of, okay, here's my numbers. How do I account for them? Oh, account. So let's look at another very, very important basic step. I want to start my company. How do I put it into a legal entity? Or in my case, I'm looking to make a pivot. What questions do I need to ask to make sure I'm making a wise decision?
I think the first question is probably one of, before you actually go into all of this stuff, you kind of have to understand, do I have a business? Like, is there something I plan to do here because I'm going to start spending a little bit of money? And then how much money do I have to spend? So you can start to figure out which route you want to go. And then the last question is somewhat, you know, what's my risk level? I would think everybody kind of has some degree of a risk level, even if you don't think you do. So the goal is you want to figure out, how do I keep everything that I have from being exposed in a company that I'm going to start?
Excellent point. Excellent point. And so I want to throw up here some different options. A lot of them people are very familiar with, but I'd like from your expertise to kind of step through what each is and how they are differentiated from each other. So the first one, pretty much everybody knows, self-employment, 1099, contractor, pretty self-explanatory. The second one would be an LLC, which is a limited liability corporation. The third one is a corporation, which is also referred to as a C-Corp. So can you just briefly on those three kind of highlight pros, cons, and who would it be appropriate for?
Okay. So the first one, the self-employed option, where you just basically are getting paid to do some services for someone. If it's over $600 in a given year, they have to give you a 1099. So you are in business because you got a 1099.
Yay!
The fact that you got a 1099 in your social security number, you personally, okay, if for some reason what you did results in getting yourself sued, which is that risk factor we were talking about, then they're suing you. They're not suing a business. There's no line that says, well, that was my business. Well, business is you. You know, you are the business. There's no question about it. There's nothing there protecting you unless you bought yourself an insurance policy. And at that point, you're exposed.
Yeah.
Which is what we were talking about before. So you have to decide, you know, do I have a risk that I'm going to get sued at some point for doing this work? The next level is if you went to your lawyer and said, I don't want to get sued for anything. I want to basically make sure that my business is separate from me. He's probably going to push you into an LLC role where you're going to register the company as its own LLC. And I always tell people it's like having a baby. It's like you have now created a person with a social security number or an EIN, employer ID number. Right? They both have 9 digits. That should tell you that's the same type of setup, right? But you're basically saying the LLC is not me. It's separate. Okay. I still tell people, think about insurance. I still tell people, you know, treat it that it's not you, because the more you treat it like it's you, then someone will turn around and tell you there's no difference between you and the company. And they'll have a pretty good argument in the court system.
Yeah.
So not a lawyer, being very careful not to say that I'm a lawyer, but that's the risk factor. And a lawyer would probably tell you, well, let's set up an LLC and here's the things you have to do. And you just stay separate and get it on a separate bank account, et cetera. And then when you get to the next level, I think the next level we said was the C Corp.
Okay. Yes.
C just refers to the chapter of the Internal Revenue Code that qualifies the corporation as, again, a separate person. And the big thing to realize here is a C corporation has the same aspect as an LLC, where you're drawing a line between you and the company, okay? C corps have certain rules they have to follow. And the big thing you have to understand on a C corp is that it's a double taxed entity. And that means when the C corp makes money, it pays taxes, and then it pays you a salary or a dividend, and then you pay taxes again. Okay. So a C corp is set up to be a separate entity and it pays taxes for itself. And then when you get the money out, you wind up paying again. You pay as a second time, same money. So that's why C corp is not necessarily the best answer for a small business that's trying to start, because you're paying twice.
Right.
But there are certain circumstances where a C corp is smart and actually can allow you to do certain things that you couldn't do in another entity.
So I want to throw a couple terms out at you.
Sure.
First of all, an LLC can either be a single member, a multi-member, or partnerships. Does that change anything here?
It doesn't change anything we just talked about.
Okay.
The line of separation between whether or not the LLC is one person or multi-person, or whether the C corp is one person or multi-person, the line between them is the same.
Okay.
It hasn't changed at all.
Okay.
We're going way, 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 way back in my career when LLCs started. Okay. There used to only be C corp or S corp. Which I think we'll talk about S corp in a minute.
We will.
But you used to only have those two. So the LLC kind of came in and said, well, we want people to be able to be a partnership, or we want them to be a corp. They can choose. We want to kind of be the hybrid in the middle. So the LLC rules came out that said, you know, there were defaults. So an LLC that's formed and only has one member was treated like a sole proprietorship. It was treated like it was a division of its owner. Okay. And if you wanted something different, if you wanted it to be treated like a corporation, you could elect that. You had to take a form and you had to fill it out and you had to send it in and get approved to be treated as a corp. So the LLC, if you have more than one member, the LLC defaults to a partnership. Okay. And you file a tax return based on a partnership. But again, you can file the same election and turn it into a corporation. So the LLC is a hybrid in that you can determine how you want it to be taxed. Okay. From a legal standpoint, no difference whatsoever. Everything just came out of my mouth as hot air. It doesn't matter. Okay.
Okay.
From a legal standpoint, there's a line between you and the company. The company is separate from you. Done deal. No more conversation. Okay. The entire flexibility of the default is for tax purposes only.
Okay.
It's just to say, what do you have to file?
Staying on the topic of taxes, can you explain disregarded entity?
Okay. The default that we were just talking about, where an LLC has one owner, okay, you default to being a division of your owner, okay? So for tax purposes, you are disregarded. Your company is nothing. When you have a single member and you do not elect out of the default status, your company doesn't exist for tax purposes. Everything that you do in that company files as if it was you, or whether if it's owned by a corporation, then it's filed as if it's part of that corporation. So it's disregarded as a separate owner, as a separate entity from its owner, is the exact, I think that's the exact wording, is that it's a disregarded entity aside from its owner.
So on an LLC,
it doesn't have a filing.
Yeah. Right. So on an LLC, there's not a LLC tax form. Do all of your business financial tax reporting on the Schedule C of your 1040. So no 1040 easy for you.
Yeah. So no, there is no 1040 easy form there. There's no way for an LLC to file on its own unless it's filing as a partnership or has elected to be a corp. And then it's filing as a corp. So it doesn't file as an LLC.
Yeah. And if you are, for example, married, filing jointly, you need to think about, okay, well, from a deduction standpoint, if we have a joint deduction and the itemized deductions from my Schedule C, you know, how is that going to impact? So there's a lot of tax implications here when you're setting up your business. How do you want to set up your business to give you not only the best legal protection, but the best tax implications? So who's going to answer that type of question?
I can.
So a CFO, CPA, that's the expert that you need in your corner to answer those kinds of questions, because I will tell you this, without that expert in your corner, you may answer that question wrong. Okay, I'm going to put my hand down now. So I now have that expert in my corner. So I'm going to throw another terminology at you now that we're on the LLC topic. Piercing the corporate veil.
Ooh. So you know that line I keep talking about between the company and you?
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty firm line. Veil. Would you say that?
That's the veil.
Yeah, okay. It's not a firm line all the time.
It's not a firm line. And when they talk about piercing it, it becomes sort of a problem. And I don't know that I can answer it too much more than very generally, because it's a legal terminology.
And you're not an attorney. Let's get that straight.
And I'm not an attorney. Being very careful. Piercing the corporate veil just kind of means that, you know, where I said there was a lot of, if you have a lot of intermingling, if you're not treating things as being separate and you don't make every transaction as if it's separate, it gives you a way for someone who wants to get at you. Mm-hmm. It gives them a way to get through that veil. It gives them a way to get through that line. The line being the corporate veil. It's as thin sometimes as a sheet, but it's enough to keep people out.
Absolutely.
That your personal assets are not part of the company. So somebody wants to sue the company, they can't then go through and get to you. Now, if you're constantly intermingling funds and doing things that show that, you know, there really is no, you don't treat it as if there's a line, that gives people the ability to go after, you know, coming through the corporate veil and go after your personal assets.
Well, it kind of goes beyond just the financials. Again, I am not an attorney. I am not a CPA. I am not a CFO. But from my academic and practical experience, I do know that if you are an LLC, a single member, and you do not surround yourself with a team of advisors or a board and have recorded notes. Let's say you're making $1 million, but it's you, only you. You're providing the services. And maybe you don't have your own business checking account, or you're just not acting as a corporation.
Right.
If there is cause for a lawsuit, you are going to have very little protection. Very little protection. So not trying to scare you, but the bottom line here is these are the type of questions you need to ask before you start your company. At any point that there's a pivot or a growth to a next stage, when you add a partner, when your goals change, any of that. And those questions need to be asked to a financial expert, such as your CFO, CPA, or to an attorney. And I want to refer back to an episode that I just recorded because I kind of foreshadowed you, Rich. it hasn't released yet, but it will release before you. I just hosted Steve Strom, and he is a wealth management advisor with Northwestern Mutual Wealth Management. Mm-hmm. And we talked, he knew that you were coming on board to talk more about business entity setup and those types of questions as it relates to the CFO side and the tax implications side. But his input was more about protecting your profits and profit management. So you need to protect the money that you're making, and you need to protect everything that you put into your business, because your personal, at this stage of your company, when you're an entrepreneur, startup, second stage, scale up, your personal and business finances are like that. They're intertwined.
Intertwined.
So let's move on to the S Corp, because this is something that so many people, either they've never heard of it, it's a gray area, they don't know what the heck it is. And I will tell you, audience, when I moved to Florida, to another state, been in business for almost 16 years, I had no idea that I should have been an S Corp all along. And it was through talking to Rich and engaging his services and benefiting from his expertise that he shared with me all the different advantages for my unique situation. Everybody's unique. That was my best choice. So can you share with the audience a little bit about what separates an S Corp and some of the different advantages that may be applicable to business owners at this stage?
Okay.
That was a mouthful. I'm sorry. Well,
no, it's okay. It's perfect. So if you go all the way back early in my career, I said the only things that were out there were C Corp and S Corp. And the interesting part was when you formed a company that way, you formed a C Corp. And then what you did was you went to the IRS with a form. I think it's a 2553. I hate using form numbers, but I believe it's a 2553. And you say, I want to be an S corp. And you get them to sign off on the fact that, you know, you just made an election to be a C corp that is now being taxed as an S corp. And again, S is the chapter of the Internal Revenue Code that governs this type of entity. And what you're basically saying is underneath I'm a C corp, but I want to be taxed like a partnership. Okay. So the S corp doesn't pay any taxes. The income flows through to you and you pay the taxes.
Okay. Single taxation.
So it eliminates the double tax. Single taxation, not double taxation. Okay. Now, there are particular rules. There are a number of shareholders. There are types of shareholders. There are all these rules that go around an S corp that say, if you do any of these things, if you take on an international investor, if you take on a partnership as a partner or as a shareholder, you're no longer an S corp from that day, the minute you do it, because the S corp can only be run in a certain way, which is part of the reason why they came up with the LLC, because people were saying, well, we want to be able to have single taxation. We want to have flow through. We want to not worry about this. And you're telling us that we can't because we're an S corp. So they came up with the LLC, and that's where LLCs came from. LLCs don't have the same restrictions. Okay. There's one key difference between them in the corporate tax world. Okay. LLC earnings are subject to self-employment tax, which essentially is the same as FICA and Medicare, or sorry, Social Security and Medicare. Okay. When you have a job and you get a W-2, you pay Social Security and Medicare out of your earnings. When you're self-employed, you pay self-employment tax, which is Social Security and Medicare. So you're paying into the same fund that everybody else does. Okay. LLC earnings are subject to the self-employment tax. S corp earnings are not. The difference being S corps are required to pay people a salary. And when you pay the salary, you pay Social Security, Medicare on the salary portion, but not on the earnings of the S corp. Okay. So the net profits of the S corp are not subject to self-employment tax. So this is where it gets to be where I tell people, and I say it somewhat in a joking manner, but definitely in a serious undertone, don't go to the water cooler and talk with people and have them say, my accountant said I should be an S corp because I'm going to save all kinds of money on being an S corp because I'm not going to pay that self-employment tax. Well,
it's only 7.5%. You don't make a life-changing decision based on 7.5%.
Every business person, okay, ask your own advisor, okay? Ask a person who's familiar with you. I had somebody call me and essentially told me, you know, I was told I should be an S corp. I want you to make the S corp election. I said, well, let's have a conversation. And he said, why do we have to have a conversation? My buddy's accountant said that, you know, we should be S corps. I said, trust me. I said, I'll do it on my nickel. I said, I will actually have this conversation with you and let's see if you really should be an S corp or not. And we went through an analysis where we looked at if you were an LLC or if you were an S corp and you paid yourself a reasonable salary, which is the statute, there's no definition of how much salary you have to pay. And a lot of these accountants are basically saying, you're going to save all kinds of money because I'm only going to give you a $10,000 salary and everything else will be not subject to the self-employment tax. That's pretty dangerous. When you're working full-time in the business to only be making $10,000 worth of salary. So if you don't think the IRS would argue with you, if they come looking at you, they will. Okay. So it has to be a reasonable number. When we went through that whole analysis, I told them, here's one other piece I want you to do. Because you're paying more self-employment tax out of the LLC, I want you to make a full pension contribution out of the LLC. And then I want you to try to make the same pension contribution out of the S corp. He was able to put a lot more money into an LLC's pension plan than he could out of the S corp because it was based only on the salary he paid. So he was limited to 25% of that $10,000 that he was trying to say he would do as a salary. So when you go through the analysis, he looked at it and he shook his head and he was scratching his head like this. He was rubbing his face going, there's no advantage. I said, no. I said, for you, there's no advantage whatsoever. I said, it's a very individual conversation. I said, you don't need to be an S Corp. I said, you just need to put more money away in your pension plan. And you come out to the same answer. And he went, but I get to keep the money. I said, yeah, it'll be in your pension plan. It'll be there when you retire. It's yours. Okay. But you get a tax deduction for it now. I said, so the LLC seems to be a better answer for you. And he's like, yep. Now, I would tell you 100 times I've gone the other way and S Corp was more advantageous. Okay. Or there was another reason for someone to want to be on an S Corp. I think one of the big reasons is some people like to have that W-2 when they walk into the bank and say, here's my W-2. This is what I make.
Uh-huh.
And the bank takes it and says, yes, you did. You paid a salary. You paid the taxes on it. That's what you made last year. Okay. Try doing that with an LLC. Not as easy because there is no W-2. You basically have to get the bank to agree that the money that you showed on your tax return is reasonable. So there's a lot of different reasons why to not jump the gun and to not decide that you're going to go down the road of I'm going to be an S Corp because my buddy John's an S Corp and his accountant said it's fine. His accountant doesn't know you.
So
unless you want to go have a meeting with John's accountant, go, you can do that. Until you do that, he doesn't know you.
So in addition to different ways that taxes are applied and being an employee rather than self-employed. So you get that W-2. So maybe, applying for credit or if you're trying to buy a house or something like that, that's easier. Right. And being able to put away different amounts in pension plans. I believe you mentioned also that you can have the business pay for health insurance or programs such as that would could be set up as a tax deduction or a deductible business expense rather than an employee expense. So there's a lot of complexities there, and you really oftentimes cannot make that decision on your own. You need the benefit of an expert advisor.
Right. Yeah, I think it's an expert advisor who's able to apply it to your situation or ask you the right questions.
Absolutely.
Because, again, the water cooler is not where I want to get my tax advice.
Yes. You are unique. Your business is unique. Your needs are unique and your needs change. They absolutely change.
Yes.
So Richard, what happens if you didn't set your business up correctly or your needs have changed? Is it a set up and done deal?
I think it's always, everything's adjustable. It's a question of what's the complexity or the cost of being able to change things around. You go down the road and you don't know what the business is going to do or what it's going to grow to, or, you can't predict the future. It's just absolutely 100% impossible. So if you set out that, hey, I know I'm just going to stay private. It's going to be a real small company. It's just going to make me money. And then you walk into it and, I think it would be great if those companies just all of a sudden made so much money that they're like, I'm going to go public. I'm going to do an IPO. Well, you can't do an IPO as a sole proprietor.
Right.
You can't do an IPO as a single member LLC. You can't bring shareholders on as a single member LLC or a partnership. You're going to wind up having to change the structure of the company somehow to determine what's going to go public. Now, that's on the positive side. On the negative side, if the company didn't go as big as you wanted it to be, and it would have been more advantageous to be smaller, to go back to an LLC, everything can happen. Like, you can do any of it. It's a question of how much money do you want to spend to do it? Because maybe it's something that requires you to, merge into another entity in another state or merge out of the C Corp. Somebody told you to be a C Corp. And down the line, you say, I thought I was going to go public and I'm not going to go public. Do I really want to be a C Corp? you know, it was a 21% rate at this point, but it's going to go back to 35%. So it's going to cost me more to stay a C Corp. So there's plenty of things that can come up along the way.
Maybe you just need help navigating. Maybe you just need help navigating to the right form to be able to. Yeah. I'm sorry, right forms, because there's usually more than one to be able to accomplish your goal and get it done the right way. And that's where they need to get somebody other than themselves.
I'll give you a really good example. If you're an S Corp and you decide, I don't want to be an S Corp anymore, you write a letter to the IRS and you say, I don't want to be an S Corp anymore. And they send you a response back that says, you're not an S Corp anymore. It's like basically that simple. Now, what it becomes after that, we probably have to look it up. Like, what were you underneath? Were you a C Corp to start? Were you an LLC? Like, that's another part of the conversation. But getting out of the S Corp is as easy as writing a letter.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing that happens is, like I said before, if you bring in the wrong type of shareholder, then your S Corp election goes away immediately and it becomes whatever was underneath before.
Yeah.
So we would have to go and just double check, like, what would it become afterwards? And you be proactive. Don't be reactive. Like, don't change these things, you know, on a knee-jerk basis and say, well, as of tomorrow, I'm going to be, you know, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, don't change
it yearly. That's not the way to do it, you know?
Don't change it yearly because you're inviting an audit.
It's a serious decision. Like, make it, you know, give it its due. Give it the time that it needs to actually be a viable decision for you. Don't just willy-nilly decide, hey, tomorrow I think I'm going to be a sole proprietor again. And then next year we'll go back to LLC, or, you know, my buddy John's going to put a dollar in and now we'll be a partnership. Like, it doesn't make an ounce of sense to be jumping around like that, because the paperwork trail can be enormous.
Right.
And you're going to wind up having to pay for that unless you're doing it yourself. And you won't want to do it yourself because it's that much paperwork. So, you know, I think don't treat it lightly. Take it very seriously on when you want to make that decision. And have a real reason why you want to.
That's excellent advice. Well, Richard, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. You've been such a resource to me. Your expertise and guidance have helped me personally with my business. And I know that you've shared tremendous value with the listeners. I think you mentioned that you might have a special offer that you'd like to share with the listeners.
Well, I would definitely, you know, look, if you have an advisor, definitely have a meeting with them and have, you know, somebody, you know, ask the questions of whether or not what I said makes sense for you personally, because, you know, I think we've stressed the fact that this is an individual, you know, and business kind of, it's very unique to you and your business. So, you know, talk to your advisor, but if you don't have one and you just wanted to reach out and find out if you could work with me, then, you know, I'm happy to give up the 30-minute consultation, have people, you know, set up a meeting. Let's have a conversation. Let's talk about your business. Let's talk about you. And let's see if there's something else that I can help you with. Or at least the more I know about you, the more I can hold on to that. If down the line you want to get, you know, some more consultation or you want to actually move forward, we've already met. So I have an idea a little bit more about you. So, you know, take the opportunity to hook up and get on the calendar for a 30-minute consultation, which it's free.
So, Rich, thank you so much. You've been such a resource to me and my business, and I want to thank you for joining us today. And I want to also invite all the listeners to reach out to Rich and get some information from him if you're looking to add his resources to you and your business to help you grow. And please join us again for another episode of Go, Go, Grow. Have a great day.